Hello, hello, hello. We're back out on the road today. I'm recording the introduction from my phone because I'm house sitting for my parents right now down south with none of my equipment apart from my phone and a laptop. So let's see if we can make this work. Today I'm joined by Steph Hammerlink, who's a brand identity designer and strategy consultant from Ghent in Belgium. He's the co-founder of branding studio Ollie and runs the blog and courses and podcast at Let's Talk Branding. Steph has been kind of on my radar very recently for making a ton of YouTube content, his podcast interviewing people in the branding space, and also his absolute love and discussion around brand strategy. So that's what we're going to be discussing today. We're going to be talking a lot about where he learned brand strategy, how he learned it, and how you can implement it in your own business. Today's show is brought to you by Skillshare. Now, Skillshare is an online learning platform that I talk about at the beginning of almost every single show because I have a link, I have an affiliate link that gets you 2 free months of Skillshare. There's literally no reason to not do it. You can go and learn whatever you'd like for 2 months, whether that is spoon whittling, writing, accounting, design, web design. You could learn how to use the entire Adobe suite. There are certified instructors and experts from all over the world available through Skillshare. Now, these 2 to 3 months can be accessed using my link, which is in the description, or you can go to skl.sh/cfowlerdesign to get your 2 free months of Skillshare today. As I said, there's no catches, and there's literally no reason to not get these 2 free months. So thank you for supporting this show and joining up to Skillshare. I want to hear exactly what you guys get up to and learn. But for now, we're going to start on with the show with Steph. Today, we're joined by Steph Hammerlink, a brand strategist and brand identity designer from Ghent in Belgium. Now, I've been to Ghent, and we'll get onto that in a minute. That's a whole nother story. But Steph, how are you doing today?
I'm perfect. The weather is really quite good for Belgium, so I'm happy about that, and all things are rolling nicely. So,
So you guys are
no
having like a
complaint.
bit of a heat wave at the moment, right?
Yeah, the whole of Europe, I guess.
I think we're all melting. One of my mates is over in Orlando at the moment, and he told me yesterday that it was actually hotter in London than it was in Orlando yesterday. So kind of insane. So to kind of jump
Crazy.
right into the show, I've asked Steph to come on today because he is a co-founder of the design studio Ollie, but he also runs a blog and podcast called Let's Talk Branding. And one of the main components of that that I've picked up on, and one of the main components that you've explained and discovered in recent years, is brand strategy. So I asked Steph to come onto the show today to talk quite a bit about brand strategy and how it's changed his design process and what he's learned from doing it.
Yes, we're gonna get geeky.
Yeah, well, I think it's honestly a really good way to get involved with it because a lot of people, particularly those in my creative circles, or in my audience, don't actually really even know what brand strategy is. So it's not even a kind of how do I do it? They don't even have that foundation level of how brand strategy works, what it is, what it means. So before we get into that, do you want to kind of explain some of your background? I'd love to hear a bit about Ollie and how that got started because it was previously called something else, wasn't it? So what's kind of the
Sure.
behind all that?
Yeah, well, we started out, I was still studying in art school, so I was a bit like a lost student. I didn't know what I wanted to do with my life. I did like social studies, and then, damn. Is that a problem that my smartphone is again ringing? I thought I'd shut it down.
Okay, well, do you want to just go and grab it, man? We'll go and if you
Yeah, what
turn
the
it on,
hell?
I'm going to
I
keep
better shut
talking.
it down.
I
Well,
don't edit
I
these.
thought I did so.
So I don't edit this. So, Steph, one of the things we're going to touch on in today's podcast, they say, we're going to hear a bit about Steph's background in design, but I'm also going to talk about how brand strategy can help change your process. And I think Steph is going to be a really good fit for that. And hopefully, we'll get some resources out of him as well in a little bit so you guys can get started learning brand strategy as well. So we're picking up, Steph, from how you got into design. So you're studying social studies, yeah?
Yeah, I was studying social studies, and I did an internship with an artist, a video artist, and we were doing workshops with in different cultural centra and so on. And I started loving this whole idea of doing video editing, and I also did some like layouts for posters. I already did that because I was a DJ, but was really lame graphic design because I had no idea. So I decided to continue studying arts because I felt that was something there that I really loved doing even more than this whole social stuff. So then I studied 3 more years of art, multimedia art, to be exact. It was a bit all over the place, very conceptual direction. And then actually in the last year of that studies, me and my brother started doing these small assignments for clients, like really small stuff, do a logo, do a menu card for a restaurant, all these little things. My brother was studying more for teaching, like he was a teacher in arts. So together we kind of started doing this graphic work, and that's how actually Cloud... what was the name again? It's first called Cloud Design, then it merged into Cloud Studio. And that was like, we started this small studio and we really just improvised. So I came out of school, we just had rented an office and started trying to find some clients. And that was about 5 years, I think, that we did this really random studio where we did too much stuff. We weren't focused at all. So we did all the mistakes that I talk about today. So I come from a place of experience when I'm talking about not being positioned well, being very undercharged. Like our budgets were really low. We were doing all kinds of stuff. And so after a couple of years of learning all that stuff and making all those mistakes, we finally got around to like this vision on what we should do and what we were really good at. And that's when we decided to rebrand the company and also change quite a bit. So we decided to no longer do any web development and so on. So there were some people that left the company as well. So we went from around 8 people to 4 people because we really wanted to focus in on this design and strategy part. And that's what we did. And now the whole company has changed for the better. It's been an awesome ride, and it's so cool to see that this new vision actually really worked and that clients are coming to us, budgets are higher, and projects are a lot better, and life is a lot better actually. So
yeah, it sounds like ride. It's been a completely turbulent 5 years. You've gone from leaving school to having 8 employees to working with your brother to repositioning, to taking on all the jobs in the world, to taking on a much smaller selection of jobs. And so what drove that positioning? Was this kind of repositioning? Was this kind of at the same time that you started to learn about strategy? Or was it, we need to just do this because it's the right thing to do?
Yeah, well, the funny thing was, like, I think we're now around, I think from starting point to now, it's almost 8 to 10 years, actually. But When I started learning more and more to work with clients, I started doing these story sessions with them, which were my way to like try to find out more about the company, because I felt like all the work we were doing wasn't founded enough on like getting to know the company and the customer. So I started doing these sessions, and it came more from like a UX background where I saw a lot of people working with post-its and so on. So I thought, oh, wait, let's do this for identity work as well. And that kind of, the moment I started doing that, I started reading more about doing research. And eventually I came to this point where I think it was Michael Johnson's Branding in 5.5 Steps, where I saw like this moment of, okay, so actually I'm doing brand strategy all along. I just didn't really realize what it was. And then really I started doubling down on that, reading a lot more, doing a lot more than just a workshop, actually developing strategies for our clients. And so, yeah, that it kind of grew organically. I didn't realize it, but after a while I did. And then I just doubled down on it.
Yeah. So it's that intuition is something that I think that I kind of had as well when I started to really go into that research side. And as you say, you kind of pick things up. You're like, okay, well, I've just made this design for this company, but I'm not sure why it works or why it should work or why it doesn't work. There's no foundation to it. It's just a visual.
And absolutely. And also another problem we were facing was that the questions we were getting, the more you like just do design, even if you're doing it in a random way, you get to know a few things about what works and what doesn't. And you see that you get a lot of questions that aren't, you just know like that's not the right solution, but the problem is you don't have like the language, nor do you have the trust or the expertise to talk them out of it. So you just do it because you need the money.
I was gonna say, did you find that before you made this change, you were getting questions from clients that you couldn't answer or you couldn't back up because you didn't have that research?
Well, what I mostly felt was that they just came to us for like execution of solutions that weren't the right solution. So it wasn't per se about the questions, because they weren't asking those questions because they didn't know they existed neither. I think we were in a place where we had small companies, small business owners, mom and pop shops, really nice people, but they were also just finding out their way in business. So we weren't working with these experienced companies.
So they were coming to you with the idea in mind, and they just wanted you to do the technician side and actually make it.
Yeah, give me a one-page website or give me a green logo.
A green logo. Oh, God. Please tell me you haven't had a brief with it's just a green logo. Goodness me.
Oh, one of my first logos, I would love to actually find this image again, was a logo for a car wash. But it was just a moment that I was in very much into 3D. I love doing 3D. So I had this idea of creating this car wash figure, which was like blue brushes kind of type.
Oh, yeah.
And he had like these sneakers on. It didn't fit at all. But this client, he was like, oh, yeah, it's super cool. It's like a mascot for my car wash. And every day I cringe when I still think about that. But yeah.
Oh, well, at least it's not like on your walk to work or something, like on your commute. No. You have to see it every day.
I think they went bankrupt.
I wonder if it's because the guy maybe spent too much money on that mascot suit that he had made after you'd drawn it.
Oh, that'd be awesome though.
God, no, can you imagine? Like, I'm really not a fan of mascot design, like just in general, but when it's done well, and like you look at the 2020 Japan mascots and stuff, and you imagine them in the suits, they're gonna look so good. But yeah, I really can't get behind mascots. Like, it's just not my thing. So you've kind of moved through this process of evaluating what your core business mission was. So how did, you said the 5.5 steps book really helped you show you what strategy was. So for the people who might be unsure about what brand strategy is at home, could you give them a little bit of a brief rundown? Because we figured out where you started, but what is brand strategy?
Mm-hmm. Well, I love this quote I heard once on my podcast by Mark Pollard, and he said brand strategy, or it was more about strategy in general, but let's start with the word strategy. It's an informed opinion on how to win. And there's a few aspects in that sentence that I really like. It's one, it's informed. So that's really important. That's the research part. You need to be informed before you can shape your opinion. That's the second word. It's an opinion. So it is still subjective, because a lot of people think about strategy as this purely scientific thing. And I think there's a lot of science in it, but it can't be all science. There are still some like insights that you have to find and that you have to act upon. So it's an informed opinion on how to win. And of course, how to win. Yeah, defining winning is actually what you do with your clients when you talk to them. Like, what is your desired future state? What is your ambition? How do you see the company that is winning? So that is the strategy part. And then, of course, what is branding? There's a lot of definitions out there. I like Marty Neumeier's, where he said that branding is the person's gut feeling about a product or a service. So it's a way to like really plan ahead how you will create a bond with customers and how that will impact your business. That is brand strategy, in my best way to explain it.
I really like that first quote. The idea of winning and making sure that you're coming out on top and making sure it's the best result. Well, the direction to get you the best result. Because when you summarize strategy in that way, particularly pairing it with branding, the mixture of something that says, oh, we have like a targeted goal to achieve and to win, mixed with gut feeling, you would never think that those two would mesh. Just the idea of like, oh, we're going to have a logical strategy plus gut feeling. And it's like, how do you balance the two? I guess that's where the art comes from.
Yeah, and that's the tricky part. I heard this question a lot, and I think it's something really tricky because strategy usually comes from this more business background or marketing background where it's all data driven. But in the end, when you look at, for example, advertising, they get a brief based on insights, data, and so on. And then they have to create something, this design execution, this creative ID that is not purely scientific, because otherwise there wouldn't be any emotional branding and people wouldn't connect to brand. So you need your human gut feeling to create something human. Otherwise it would just be like super dry data or messaging that wouldn't connect. So it's really hard to do that. And I think, yeah, that's where this gut feeling comes in. But I know it's a bit fluid where it goes to.
Yeah, because it's definitely that balancing act. I can hear that in the way you're describing it, that you do have to find that perfect balance. And even if you do have decks and decks and pages of data and market research, if you put it out into the world purely as that, it's just going to flop, isn't it? It's not going to have any human side. But then there is the opposite end. Did you see the brand identity guide for the Pepsi logo? The one where they talk about the Pepsi universe and
I've heard about that. Probably they went overboard.
That's exactly what I was about to say. It's like it feels like they've taken this gut feeling immersion side, taken a couple of mushrooms, and then just run with it the entire way through.
And that's the problem. And that's why I think strategy for me is really talking to a lot of people, making sure that another beep. I'm going to have to kill you with editing. So I'm just going to burn off the beep.
Oh, no, don't worry about it. So talking a bit more about that Pepsi logo, the Pepsi logo design, they talk about this Pepsi universe. And when they're talking about the strategy behind the Pepsi universe, they're not even going around and talking about the meaning or the marketing behind it or why it works. They were just going through, for the people listening at home, go and check out this guide because it's stupid. It's like the worst bit of $1 million I think I've ever seen spent. So yeah, we were talking moving through to about the balancing act between strategy and that gut human feeling. So
yeah, one more thing I wanted to say on that. That's why it's so important to never do strategy on your own. Even if you're just a one-man show, talk to people, confront your ideas, because that's where this gut feeling can be tested and your assumptions can be like challenged. Because I think that's where a really good strategist comes into play. He doesn't just see the data, make the insight, and then presents it back to its client. Like, this is the perfect way to go. If you see something that strikes you as interesting, then talk to your client, talk to the customer and say like, okay, I found that this insight could be really valuable for our brand positioning. Do you feel the same about it? And maybe they'll say, yeah, that's totally not relevant. And then maybe it could be that this is just a personal thing. Maybe it's because of your personal history or the context where you live in. Sometimes we have to create brands for people that aren't like us. So you have to constantly challenge your thinking and your gut feeling by having conversations, reading data, and doing the research.
Have you ever run into when you've had this conversation with a client, you found that insight, you found that idea, have they ever been like so hard with their conviction that even a super obvious insight, they're like, nope, that doesn't make sense with our brand. We're never going to touch it. I hate the idea, etc.
I probably have, but it's been a while, because I think what we now do in the last year or two is really vet our clients and look for the perfect fit. And usually I've had these moments where we were talking in sales conversations and where I really feel like they're not gonna budge on this idea, or I'm just like, what I try to do is like, I slip in this small ID just to see how flexible they are, or maybe how disruptive they would be, or how open they would be in a sales conversation. It's like, maybe why don't we, I don't know, flip this thing around and think about it in this way. And if they immediately like, they just shove it away and they say, no way, that's not going to happen. We need this and this and this. And it's just like, okay, that's not going to work for us. We need to, we'll find you another party for that. So I would say like, I probably have had this in the moment before that, but the more you talk about it openly with your client or prospect in sales, the less you will have this. And if you do have it, I would say try to show them as much as you can the insights you got from research and customers, because the most obvious reason they will fight you on this is because they think it's an opinion you voiced on your own. It's an assumption made by you and it's not backed by anything else. I think if you put the time in really showing how you did the research and what the research was, this can be avoided.
So brand strategy requires quite a lot of transparency then between you Absolutely. And the client.
Absolutely. It's more about like having these deep conversations with them than it is about presentation, because a lot of people think that it's about creating beautiful PowerPoints and that's some part of it. But I think for me, the most important sessions are really the workshops and the truth sessions, where we just challenge the thinking of everybody around. So because I have assumptions about this brand, about this customer, but your client has a lot of assumptions about his customer, about his company, about the market, about people in general. And it's our job to challenge these and sometimes even just remove these completely, because they're usually based on just personal experience, but that isn't always the truth. So yeah, it's super important.
So it's a really good way to even help just your clients see what maybe their own personal biases are if you're coming in through that opposite direction. So
yep.
So that's kind of the basis for why brand strategy works. Now, if you were to be approached by a prospect, what would it be in that sales call that would make you think, oh, we need to do brand strategy here? They need the time and this workshop to really hone in on the vision and the direction that we want to go in. What would be some signal traits for that?
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, what for me, it's never a question for doing it or not. There's the first part about this is just what I like to refer to as due diligence. It's the same with lawyers. They have to do their research, because even if the client is not interested in brand strategy at all, I just need to like make sure that I understand the brand to do good work. So even if there's no need for repositioning or anything, I'm still gonna at least oblige them to do a workshop with me and sit down and talk about the brand. But that's just like the first part of it. But the second part is really just if you start asking these questions about who their customer is, what their brand is about, how they are perceived, I think 80 or 90% of the time, for what I have seen, they really have just this slight idea, but it's not for sure about what their company is about. And usually they will tell you something in the lines of, yeah, we have a strong product, but our story isn't coherent. Or there's a lot of these sentences that, and we know, maybe they know what their value proposition is, but they don't understand their customer. Maybe they understand their customer, but they don't know what their positioning is. Maybe the market has changed and they need something new. They think they need a new technology. But it's just this matter of like trying to go a little bit deeper behind each problem. Oftentimes, the first starting point is always, hey guys, I saw your work, really cool. I need a website. Okay, interesting. Why would you need a website? Well, yeah, I think it's time for me to enter this new field of e-commerce because I think a lot of people are buying online. Okay, and then you ask them like, how will people perceive your brand and why is this so important for you? And then you will see that sales are dropping because they have adapted. And then maybe it's the question of the story isn't relatable anymore, or maybe they haven't got a strong personality. So it's like this. Card house where you, if you pull the right card, it will just like trickle all down and you will feel that there is really need for a cohesive story around their brand. And that's, I think, one of the main reasons where brand strategy comes into play. But it's, I think, like just for the starting point, just like for your own, you have to do it. And then for your client, usually it's a way to challenge their thinking, their assumptions about the brand, and really have a long-term plan to go forward. But I think this answer was a bit all over the place. I'm sorry for that.
No, it makes sense. It makes sense. It really does. Because the way you described it as due diligence, I think is going to be kind of a shocker for some people, because many people and many designers, particularly those who are, well, not even just those who are starting out, but even people who have been in the career, in the field for quite a long time, they don't understand that you need to do that research. You need to have that due diligence to go out there and really spend the time looking at understanding the company, understanding the client base, understanding the marketplace, and turning that into something that will make your life honestly easier in the execution process. A lot of people are still just doing what I describe as chucking spaghetti at the wall. They're just like, okay, well, we've got a rough idea and some rough sentences about your company. Oh, okay, you want a website landing page? Okay, here's 10 ideas, pick one. And that isn't effective. So when you're coming through that process and not doing your due diligence, if you think back to when you weren't doing brand strategy, what differences do you see between doing it and not doing it in terms of the overall outcome or even the happiness of the client at the end of the day?
Mm-hmm. Ooh, there are so many things on so many levels. So I think first, one of the biggest issues we had was just low budget. So that's also a fun thing to think about, of course. Once you start really solving business problems, you can command a much higher premium. So that was a starting point where we really were happy with low volume of clients, but high budgets. Instead of having, I think at a certain point, we had about 120 running clients at the same time.
That's ridiculous.
And it was just, but it was all like scraps, like small stuff. Like, yeah, you make me this flyer. I need this small thing. I need that. I need this. And we thought like, okay, if we build up this volume, we'll have a lot of recurring revenue, but yeah, okay. That was just, people were going crazy. My inbox was flooded every day with hundreds of emails. So, but that's just, okay, so budget is one thing. Of course, it's really super nice to have a lot more budget to work with once you start doing strategy. What also changed was the type of work. You just said it before, like the amount of work you have in the execution phase, if you do strategy right, is just a lot less. I think it was, before it was 20% thinking, 80% doing, and now it's almost 80% thinking and 20% doing, just because we prepare so much for this execution phase. Actually, if you really know design, and I think we all know this feeling as designers, that once we talk enough with a client, we can already see somewhat of a solution. And we already know like what it's going to take to do it. And oftentimes it's maybe not even that hard, but the problem is oftentimes when we present the solution, we go back and forth and back and forth and hundreds of iterations. And that's what's creating the work. Actually, if you have the right taste and you understand the client, maybe you can create this logo in 2 hours or 2 weeks, whatever you want, but it's not the biggest amount of work. So a lot less iterations. Actually, no iterations. There has been in the last, I think, 30 or 40 identity presentations, we've had no single client arguing with the presented logo direction. First option, go. So that's magic, I believe.
Hopefully people listening at home realize that how much of an epiphany that is and how much of an amazing piece of skill that is. Because I bet when you first did that and the client went, yeah, love it. The research all backs this up. It's fabulous. The design concept is great. Let's go. Let's tie this up. Let's finish this project right now. And
we were high-fiving like crazy.
Yeah, I bet.
Because you're expecting like, okay, we did this work and okay, after this is going to be probably around 2 more rounds or 3 more rounds of this stuff. So you're just like throwing that in their face just to get the first ID. And then and all of a sudden they're like, yeah, amazing. Let's do this. Okay. So we can put all the work in creating this cool stuff.
You've got like, I know that exact feeling where you get some like butterflies and like anxiety kind of coming on. Oh, ambulance. Oh, no, fire engine. Hi. So you get kind of those butterflies coming through and I know that exact feeling because I did some presentations recently and it was the same thing. So you present the idea and then they go, yeah, fab, great. And I was just like, oh my God, like, oh, I'm not sure what to do now.
You're just like partying in your head. I had this presentation with my brother. I think it was one of the earlier brand strategy projects and it was a big client. Like it was one of the bigger manufacturers here in Western Europe for furniture. And we had like this strategy thing and we did a really nice strategy phase, but they were already super excited. But actually, the client didn't even ask for a rebrand or a new name. But we knew we had to do something because we felt like this. We knew it was there, and we knew they knew it, but they were like kind of avoiding it. So at the end of the strategy presentation, we dropped like this funny sound, and then we dropped in the new logo, the new name. And it was like, at first I saw this the CEO guy just like going like this. So I thought, okay, we screwed up. We really screwed up. This was a bad move. And then he said like, yeah, this is really good, guys. I think and he was like, you saw it on his face that he realized that he had to do it and there was no other way out of this, but he was kind of bummed at the same time. And then at the end, everybody was like really excited. And when we were driving back in the car, I still remember this feeling of like, you're on top of the world. It's just so cool. But this was risky. I wouldn't recommend doing it actually, but just that feeling of getting your clients and really being excited about this completely new direction is awesome.
But you say kind of not to do it, but I'm sure deep down you had that feeling of, well, we've done the research. To kind of swing this back around to brand strategy, you've done the research, you've done your due diligence. So you can take that risk because that risk is so much smaller. Because if they, they really hate it, that's fine. But at least you can back up your idea. At least you have something to base it on.
Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm just working on this new ebook thing. And I have this certainty curve in it, and it goes a bit like this. If you have the start of the project, so the certainty curve is like it's at its lowest point. So certainty is actually zero. You have no certainty about the project. And then if we go through the brand workshop, the certainty starts rising up because we start to get a feel for, okay, this company, they like that, they love this, they know who that is, maybe there are some issues there. Then like in the midpoint for me, there's this truth session I always do. And that's a session where I challenge the ideas from the workshop and I present some of the research. And this is really the most critical session because it's really like it's almost like a boxing match where we go all in on really going critical on all the things. And then after this, like the certainty is really high, we're almost at the mid level. And during the time that the brand strategy and identity is presented, I think we're already at 90% certainty. That's what a lot of people forget. They think that like you keep your client in the dark and then it goes up like 10 and then they, but that's not how it goes. You just keep building this certainty and the safety and this transparency throughout your process instead of waiting till the end and then dropping something in their face. And then of course they're going to say like, yeah, we need to have another iteration because they had no idea what was coming.
They need to see the things along the way, basically. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because if you,
it's absolutely.
It's like if it, kind of a more simple way to look at it is if you were to, I don't know, go to a car dealership and buy a car, but it's under a cloth the entire time. The only time you actually get to see it is when you've given them all your money. So you've got no idea whether it's going to be like a Toyota Prius or a Ferrari or a Land Rover or a Fiat 500 that's from the 1980s. Like you have no idea. And that's often... I used to find this with my clients. I wondered why they didn't like what I was showing them. And it didn't seem obvious at the time. But if you think about Steph's curve that he just described, guys at home, if you're not doing any of that research, if you're not taking the time to even basic stuff, you don't have to do like full strategy, but at least do some research and ask some questions and you'll move up that curve. And you'll eventually be able to get to the point where you can get to doing strategy and then working out from there. Because your life, it's not just like the certainty level goes up for getting approval from your work, but the way you were describing it, as you got up that curve, your smile started to get bigger. So you were like, I could see that it actually makes it less stressful as well.
Yes, I think by the time you present the identity, that should be a celebration of the work done. And that's the only thing. Like I've had really this moment where we were just all like standing up and clapping and it was like almost like we were almost started dancing just because we knew like come on, guys, we did all this great research and we decided on this awesome positioning and we knew what visual direction we were going at. And here it is. And you present it with all its glory because you have now you have the time to invest more time in making it really shiny and nice. That's what, like, in the last, I think, 5 or 6 identity presentations, I did like this whole teaser thing with some music and some animation. And there's so much work gone into it, but I would have never have done that. Like, we would have all said, are you crazy? We still have 3 more weeks of billable iterations after this. So don't do it. Like, you're don't put all your money there. But now it's like, we know it's gonna be good. So let's just make it great. Let's just throw it out of the park and like over deliver.
Yeah. And it gives you the opportunity, doesn't it? Brand strategy gives you the opportunity to over deliver as well.
Absolutely. That's, I think if we would look back at like reviews from clients before when they were working with us, I'm sure they would have a lot of complaints and a lot of them would have been like completely directed and just because we were so trying to do so much for so little money that we made a lot of mistakes and things were all over the place. So I can imagine even for clients, they pay you a low fee. So their perception of you is already lower. So they think like these guys, yeah, they're not the best in the biz for sure, but I don't have a lot of money. So let's do it with them. And then you start making these small mistakes. So your perceived value goes even lower. So it's from both ends, like really not a good place to be in.
So now we kind of understand what it is and why we do brand strategy. What does a session, if you don't mind sharing how you might kind of go through a general structure, what does a session with a client actually look like? So you've established that you can work together. You've signed all the contracts and sorted all that out. You know the workshop's coming up. You get in the room with the client and or even just on a video call for people maybe listening at home if you don't have the ability to go and see clients. What would be your first step? How would you take this workshop? How would you handle it?
Yes. So I do have a course on this. So let's plug it in here.
Do it. I'll link it.
I have the brand workshop course. So that's perfect for this. But I'll walk you through it. So what I do is, it's called a brand workshop, is we have around 6 posters or we have a big whiteboard on the wall. And there's a couple of things to before you start this workshop that you need to make sure of. First off, the most important thing is that you have all the stakeholders there, all the people that are important. I like to call it like the coalition of the willing, the people that will work on this brand and think that it's an important project for the brand. But also it's sometimes good to have some critical people, but just make sure like that they are the decision takers, because I've had workshops where it was great atmosphere, but afterwards the CEO walked in and he just like, yeah, it's all cool guys, but I don't want this. So make sure they're all there. And then the brand workshop itself, how I do it is I work with post-its and we have some questions on the wall. These questions, you can find them in Michael Johnson's 5.5 Steps. It's kind of, I base it on that and some other books, but basically it's what are we doing and how, who are we here for? How are we different? Why are we here? What is our personality? What are our values? Let me think. I think that's about it. Something. So these really simple questions. It's not like that there's value proposition and brand key models on the wall and we start doing this crazy stuff. It's just like these simple questions. And then you just ask them. They write it down on post-its, really simple answers. And then you have a conversation about each of these questions. So if you can't do it physically with post-its, just make sure that it's kind of analog and that they don't bring any presentations or material, because this is really about like uncovering and facilitating what they know about the brand. Because oftentimes you will see if they bring their own material, it's really already written down and really well thought of. But I think if you can't like summon it on a post-it and you're working in that company, that means that it's not relevant and that a customer will definitely not remember it. So that's why I try to like, I put all the smartphones, all the material, all of it goes outside of the door. It can be used later on in research to further elevate it. But that's the brand workshop. It's going through these simple questions finding out what your client thinks about his customer, about his company, about the market, about his competitors, just like get a basic feel for this brand. And then you have, after this workshop, you have like a really solid idea of what they think that the brand stands for. Then it's your job to go out and find out if what they think is the actual truth. That's the next step. So I don't know if you want to just dive into the next step.
Yeah. So let's just talk about your little workshop firstly. So when it comes down to those questions, I can imagine being a client sat in that room and you revealing these whiteboards and these questions and then going, oh shit, like I don't actually know these things. And I don't know why we have this personality. I don't know why we do this, why we do that. Do you ever run into problems where someone can't think of anything or they go, I'm not sure what to say here. How do you encourage them to be open? Because I know from client interactions that sometimes it can be difficult to squeeze information out of certain people, but also sometimes people don't know how to word their own thoughts correctly.
Yep, absolutely. Well, first, there's a couple of things that's why the post-its are important, I think, if you can do it in that way, because it allows people to have a little bit of private space and write down answers, which is easier than like answering face to face, because that gives us a lot of stress. I also set the framing before the conversation. I explain them that this is not about bringing the right answers. It's not about being smart. It's about the customer. It's about how our customer perceives our brand. And that's what I also, that really helps is like, I always tell them like, you're sitting here today as a customer of your brand, not as an internal company person, because that really helps them in making sure that they think about it as a brand and not just as a company with all the internal struggles. And also what I tell them is, this is not about the brand today. This is about the brand we want to create. And that also, again, helps in opening up perspectives, making sure that they can think a little bit more ambitious about this whole workshop thing and not just like be really down to earth about all this stuff. Also what helps is doing a lot of like follow-up questions. So if I ask what's the brand personality? Yeah, some people will probably block, but you can ask like, if you would meet this person in a bar, like what would he be like if that's the brand? Or maybe what's a famous character that you can think about that you would like to be a spokesperson for your brand? Or yeah, all these, there's a lot of like these smaller inspirational questions that you can ask that can help them in like priming. Also, what really helps is having more than, I think, one is never good. I did sessions with one and we went through way too fast just because of the awkwardness of this like one-on-one conversation. So I think if you have 3 or 4 people, that's good. 5 to 6. And then 8 and up, then it's getting dangerous. But make sure you have like around 3 to 5 people. I think that will give a little bit more dynamic. And like if they see thoughts on the wall, they can bounce off that and they can write their own stuff. But it's really also just doing a lot of these workshops and making sure you're good and making people feel at ease. I think, for example, Chris Doe is this person that is really good at this. Like he has this personality that's really calm and yet kind of challenging. I think that if you want to be someone in the session, it's kind of this personality without the like the real critical Chris Doe, because that's not in that session. You're more there to just facilitate and uncover and keep asking why and how, and could you tell me a little bit more about this? And I can see you're like, what also helps is just addressing people and talking to them. Like I know your role in this company is to be with the marketing, like from your perspective, what is really important here? And maybe that helps them, giving them a little bit more like excitement about it. So it's a lot of small things really.
But those all come together, right? So they all come together at Absolutely. The end and give you the answers that you need to do the next step, which is that market, you say the market research, and to make sure you go and do the next, your next bit of due diligence, should we say. So yeah. How do you take this kind of, it's not analytical information, it's like personality related things, it's ideas about the company. How do you translate that into something that's maybe more objective or more data focused?
Yes. So there's a first off, like if you have these six questions and you have the answers by your client, then you could basically just go out and try to see if you get the same answers. If you start Googling the company, if you start looking at reviews, if you start looking at competitors, because oftentimes when you ask your client, who are your competitors and what makes you better, you will see that they have an idea what makes them better, but it's not always. If you then look, for example, at customer research and maybe look at reviews, you can see that customers have a completely different perception. So now it's your job to go out and start challenging these assumptions by doing desktop research first and foremost, just like Googling the companies, Googling your own company, Googling the website, looking at reviews, Facebook, social media, so on. Also really interesting here is to start reading trend reports, articles. That's really, especially like just getting in the industry, that's what really helps. For me is just, for example, if you're doing a hamburger restaurant, just start reading about how is this restaurant industry evolving, what is happening, what are the challenges. So this is really important, desktop research. What I also is a big thing for me is customer research. So doing the customer research, you have three parts for me. The first part is passive customer research, meaning you just look what is already there. So conversations online, reviews, and so on. But then you have two other parts, and that's the quantitative and the qualitative research. So quantitative is like doing a survey or a type form. There's Google Docs, there's type form, there's a lot of tools you can use about the brand, but not specifically about like, yeah, what do you like about brand X or Y? Usually I do research about assumptions surrounding positioning. For example, would you feel that a healthy burger concept would be something that you are interested in? Or what do you think about fast food today? Like this is really about more about getting into the customer's mind and less about making sure that your company has 10 points out of 12 or whatever. So really getting into this idea of, will they find the positioning like relatable? Will they really love it? Will they buy it? That's really something you do research for. And that can happen on a quantitative scale. So that's getting more answers and making graphs out of them. So if you have around 100 to 200 answers, you have a really good supportive data for your clients. For example, if you say, we have three directions the company can go on. We can be a vegan restaurant, we can be a healthy restaurant, or we can be a meat restaurant. And we've asked 200 people about this, and they've said that this is the most interesting concept. Then maybe we should think about that. Of course, you don't like let the customer decide on positioning. You try to get a feel for their perceptions and emotions, but don't just put it all on them to do it. It's more about their feelings. And then you have the qualitative research, where it's actually the same thing, but you really do conversations, what I already mentioned before. You just go out there, you make phone calls, you do focus groups or whatever you need to do. This can be really small, just talking to your own family about their behavior, but this can also be done in a more professional way. But that depends on your budget and how skilled you are at this. So, and if you combine all these three things in terms of customer research, you have a real strong body of like insights to work with, and you can show that and reflect that back to your client. And that's like, I think for me, the strongest research to show your client is customer-based research, because they're the ones buying, and your client will always tend to believe them, because they're like, okay, so they want that. That's not, I don't want it, they want it. And that's like a really strong, if you have these insights, these customer insights backing you, you're like, you can't really lose anymore. They won't see you as this person trying to put in his own opinion. I think long winding road.
Yeah, no. It's fine. It's a nice, you've got such a base of knowledge, such a wide base of knowledge to go from. It's really nice to hear that there is a certain structure to it. It's not just a case of you're going out and we're going to try a SurveyMonkey survey. We're going to go and talk to six people on the street. Like, there's actually very specific steps. So one thing I just noticed there that you said, you're kind of saying that the customer's ideas and the brand, so the CEO level, the stakeholders' ideas about the company, they need to mirror each other, but not completely. Because obviously, sometimes a customer will say they want something and that's not going to be anywhere near the right vision. And sometimes the CEO is going to say, we want to be a meat burger restaurant when actually they should be vegan. So it's, again, you're using your facilitation skills and experience as a strategist and as a designer to say, where's the balance again between the two?
Yeah, well, I like to see it as like you have this, you have the company, your client, he has a certain amount of skill sets and things they are really good at. Some things you can't just change. Of course, you can have a really disruptive company that wants to change everything, but usually there's like the set of suppliers, the set of things, tools you have to work with, and that are also part of their strengths. And that like feeds into the positioning. And I use this as like a framework, or you could say like it's almost like if you had this cardboard and you cut out certain shapes, and those shapes are like the constraints but also the strengths of the company, and then you lay that over the customer research and you see what is overlapping, there you know you have a really strong positioning. So you can't just say like people want vegan, we're a completely different, we have a chef that's the best chef in meat. You can't just put them together. Well, maybe there's something there if you can feel that this company is ready for this innovation. But if you can see through this lens of the company to these constraints, like how can we do this thing where we make it relevant for these customers, where we can attract them from our own constraints. So it's something you really need to think about, because just having this idea of positioning is not like we see this empty space in the market and we're just gonna take it, because then you're creating a lot of risk for your client. You need to be aware that they just can't take all their stuff and move over there. It's not that easy unless they're a really agile company. You need to be aware of like the brand equity they've bent, the constraints they have. There's a lot of things to take in consideration, and that's why this workshop is also important. That's why you need to make sure that you know their objections. But if you do know that, and from that lens, you look at customer research and you see something that stands out and that supports their strengths, and you can match that, then you have like the best positioning because it's relevant.
That's really interesting to hear. It's kind of like if I imagine now, instead of a mirror, more like a Venn diagram. So you've got all your circles, yep. You find that gap in the middle. So they're the first two stages. Is there a third stage at all that kind of wraps that up with maybe an art direction or something like that?
So there's the brand workshop. Then I start doing like this research phase. And then in the middle of this, there's three steps for me when it comes to strategy: brand workshop, research, that's the in-between. Then it's a truth session. That's where I like show what I have uncovered during this research.
You call that the truth session?
Truth session. Yeah, cool. And I call that the truth session.
Nice. That's a cool
just
name.
To give it a little bit more drama.
Yeah, I like it.
In this truth session, you just talk about like, I saw in the research that this is really important, but from the workshop, we've said that we were going to do this. Do you think that this will be relevant for them? Or maybe you can see an insight from this customer research that wasn't brought up at all in the workshop, but it's really interesting. And you can just challenge them, like say, customers today, they really feel that, I don't know, shampoo should be vegan again, I don't know, or it should be cruelty free. And they're really feeling strong about that. Like, is that realistic for our company to do? And do we want that? Oh yeah, sure. We were already thinking about it. Well, guys, let's move on with that, because that can really make our brand stronger. So you bring up these things you saw in the research. You bring up also sometimes a bit rough things. Like if you feel there were objections in the workshop, now is the time to bring them up. Because what I try to do is I try to like present them this image of this new company that they could be, but also make them aware of like that it's going to cost them, that it's going to they will have a lot of efforts. Like, maybe guys, if we decide to do this, you're gonna have to retrain your whole stuff, and they're gonna be like, whoa, you don't want to do that. Well, you just said like that this was a great idea and that you want to do it, but do you realize that it's going to take that to do that? And then I think, yeah, maybe that's not such a good idea because we don't want to put all that money in. Well, then we can't have that positioning. You see, like you have to confront them with this reality of, because it may sound cool in this abstract room, but if you don't really implement this whole brand behavior on the experiential level of the brand, it will fall flat and people won't recognize the positioning and it won't be a strong brand. So you really need to, in this session, it's really like being a bit harsh, being a bit, I don't know, you can be the Gary Vee or the Chris Doe or whatever, but just like confront them with, I saw this thing that's really interesting, but do we really want to be there or is it too much for us? Can we handle this? Will we be able to handle this? And throughout this true session, you will feel that the research you've done and the workshop will come together, hopefully in this direction that you can set forward. After that, after the truth session, you continue on with fine tuning. Actually, what I start doing from there on is like, I think after this truth session, you should have some form of the brand pillars or the positioning or the platform, whatever you want to call it. And you just start building a narrative. So you really build out how you did the research, what the insights were, how the competitors are, and you build this out in a nice presentation, of course. And then you present it in the brand strategy presentation moment. That's the third moment in the brand strategy process for me. But again, as I said before, if you remind the certainty curve, you should already be at like, let's say 60 to 70 to 80%. You should be sure that they will agree with the positioning. I mean, like they can still go out on small things like, yeah, this value, maybe we could add something to that. But if you're not sure that they will agree on the positioning, you're in the danger zone. It's the same with logos. Like if you have the feeling that you saw this mood board or you did this stylescaping or you did something together with your client to make them talk about design, you know they saw these different directions and you know they can expect that, then you'll be safe when you do it. So the brand strategy presentation, again, it's a celebration of the work done before that. That's where you really get people excited. And that's where you, the most important is where you actualize the brand. So you show examples of messaging, you show a manifesto, you show, I don't know, you can do crazy stuff there. I've done like small videos, I've done weird stuff, I've done jokes, I've done, yeah, whatever you want to do, you can be creative there. But that is the brand strategy presentation and that is like the ending and the transition towards creative execution. So that's how brand strategy looks like for me.
That's a super in-depth view and I'm kind of soaking all this information in going, right, well, now I'm going to go and listen to this 6 times, really soak it all up and go, how do we action this immediately? Because the way I've always seen brand strategy and the way I do my process right now, just to compare to what you do, I feel like I'm maybe like 40% there. And there's just so much more detail that, as you've just explained, that you can go into. There's so much more time and effort you can put into really refining that strategy, really refining that positioning and going in with a, okay, well, we know exactly how this is going to look. We know exactly what the tone of voice is going to be. And hopefully for you guys listening at home, that is going to be a real kick up the ass to say, right, well, now we need to go and learn this to do this properly. Because when you do it properly, you get much better results. So kind of it's the last thing I want to ask you about is, what if someone was thinking about learning brand strategy, what would be the reason why they should do it? And then maybe if you've got any, obviously you said you've got your course that you've created as well, but are there any other resources as well as your course that might be helpful?
Mm-hmm. Well, first off, all this stuff that I'm telling you, like this is something I learned in a couple of years. So don't like put too much pressure on yourself when you're hearing this and think like, oh my God, I'm not doing all the stuff I need to. I don't even know. I'm just also learning, constantly evolving this process. So just if you are asking questions to your client and you're thinking about the why and the how and the what before you're doing design, like already hats off to you. I think that's the starting point where you should be happy with yourself and just keep evolving on that. Okay, but if you do want to learn brand strategy and why you should learn brand strategy, I think if you're frustrated with the type of work you're getting, if you're frustrated with the budgets you're getting, if you're frustrated with the type of feedback you're getting, too much iterations, all this stuff, then I think it's time to learn about this. But actually, I think, as I said before, it's due diligence. I don't know if you have a choice. You just need to learn this stuff. it's like a doctor saying, like, I'm gonna go in and just like diagnose on my own feelings, and I'm just gonna do this thing. Okay, good. But then you're a shaman or whatever, and not a licensed doctor. Like, doctors have an oath, the oath of, I don't know, Hippocrates or whatever his name is. Like, we should have that as well, that we swear to like abide good for our clients, and that we will help their businesses on the highest level possible. Maybe I'm exaggerating, but
okay. I think you're right. Like, just to summarize that as well, like, Blair Enns in his book Win Without Pitching talks in his manifesto about how a brand, to be the best and the best service and the most valuable to their clients, must be constantly educating themselves. So think of this as your education. And if you don't go out and learn brand strategy, you're not doing that due diligence to not just yourself, but to also to your clients as well. Because as Steph says, if you're tired of small budgets, if you're tired of doing lots of iterations, there are things you can do to change that. And learning brand strategy, even if it takes you a couple of years, even if you start tomorrow with 6 questions instead of a whole workshop, then you are far better off than when you were yesterday or 6 months ago.
Absolutely. Yeah. 100% agree. Just like, the creative brief is a thing that it existed in advertising, and it's just the same thing. This is due diligence where people are talking about. They took the time to brief themselves about the business challenges, and then they created something creative about that. So whatever you want to call it, just make sure you do your work up front. Okay. But let's talk about resources. So of course, there's my place, there's branding.courses, where I have 3 courses right now, one on workshop, one on the complete thing, all the essentials of brand strategy, what I just talked about, and then one about presenting brand strategy. Of course, Branding in 5.5 Steps, really good book. I think it's like the perfect primer for learning this stuff in a really simple way. I have a resources page where there's a lot more books. I think Creative Strategy and the Business of Design, Douglas Davis. The Two Bobs podcast is also really good if you want to learn about this more, the business level of it, the sales of strategy, how you talk with your clients about this. Blair Enns. The future, of course. There, I think they also create a lot of great content. Marty Neumeier is, I think, really fundamental in this understanding. And then I just think maybe one more than I think is NPR, the podcast, How I Built This. It's really funny. I learned a lot of strategy there, because this is a podcast that talks with entrepreneurs. I think we need to be mindful of not always staying in our design bubble and start listening to people about business, how they built their company. Because if we want to help them on that level, we need to understand how businesses are built. So How I Built This by NPR, I think, is one of the most amazing podcasts. All the big stories about how these companies came to life. It's just the best inspiration.
I'll link that page down in the description. So if you want to go and check out those resources that Steph has curated, and also his courses, you can go and check them out there. So thank you so much, Steph, for coming on and spending basically an hour talking to me about how brand strategy is going to change your process and change everyone's process, and how it changed your world as well. So where can people find you on the internet?
Let's talk branding.be. That's the home where everything lives. And then on Instagram at Let's Talk Branding, on Twitter at Steph Hamelink. I didn't get that handle. But yeah, if you go to the letstalkbranding.be, you can find everything there. There's also a Slack community for people wanting to have more of these conversations. Yeah, that's it. Thanks for having me. This was really interesting. And sorry if I ranted on. I can be a bit like, if you give me the go, I can just blah, blah, blah for 10 hours about this stuff.
I thoroughly enjoyed it, man. Like, I much rather sit here and soak up all this information than I would try and jump in at every sentence that you say. So all those links, guys, are going to be down in the description. And if you enjoyed this episode of the Fowler Hour, you can tweet using the hashtag Fowler Hour, or find us on Instagram at CFowlerDesign for, well, on all the platforms at this point. And if you're listening on iTunes or a platform that can give you a review, please leave us 5 stars and a nice comment maybe about this episode, about what you're going to go and learn and what Steph has taught you on today's episode. So thank you very much to everyone who's joined us today, and we'll see you guys next time. Bye for now.